You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Today I want to talk about the passports, the travel documents that the Palestinian people have. Needless to say, that we don't have one type of passports or travel documents. This is a reflection of the different realities that the Palestinian people live under. Every aspect in the lives of the Palestinian people, all of them, is impacted by the reality that he or she lives under, where in the world they live, where in the occupied Palestinian land they live, in Gaza, in West Bank, in Jerusalem, inside Israel, in diaspora, and if in diaspora, is it Jordan, or is it the other neighboring Arab country like Lebanon, Syria, Egypt, or is it Iraq? They are not the same when it comes to travel documents. How come some Palestinians hold Jordanian passports when other Palestinians hold Lebanese / Syrian / Egyptian / Iraqi travel documents, not passports? And what about those who have Jordanian passports? Does this make them dual citizens of Palestine and Jordan? And why is it that only Jordan granted the Palestinians full passports? Why is it that Lebanon, Syria, Egypt, and Iraq did not grant them full citizenship, but instead granted them something below passport or para-passport, something that they call wathiqa or travel document? And if you are holder of a travel document, whether it's granted from Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, or Iraq, does this make you a citizen? What kind of rights you're eligible for? And what kind of other rights you are denied to? And what about the people in Jerusalem? Do they have a special case, or they are like the people of the West Bank, or maybe the people of the 48 areas, or the Israelis, the Palestinians inside Israel? Before 15th of May 1948, passports were not a thing. I mean, very small percentage of Palestinians felt the need that they should obtain a passport. And the government was a Commonwealth government. It was the British Mandate. And there was one passport under the British Mandate before 15th of May. And that passport was the Palestinian passport, the government of Palestine. But it was the British Mandate government of Palestine. So it was not a national government. It was a colonial British government. But they called themselves the government of Palestine. There was the Palestinian passport, which was given to all those who live in historical Palestine, whether they are Arabs, the landowners, or settlers. Britain unilaterally withdrew on 15th of May 1948, and hence came an end to the Commonwealth government of Palestine. Within an hour or two, the Israelis declared the so-called independence, and hence came the inception of a Jewish state in Palestine. And it was by the end of 1948, over 78% of historical Palestine. Inside this territory, there were 600,000 to 650,000 Jews and 135,000 Palestinians. And this is after uprooting 920,000 Palestinians who were driven out from their homes, including my mother's family and my father's family, from two different places in what later became Israel. Before we go to the refugees, those who became refugees, those who were ethnically cleansed and driven out from their homes and villages and towns, and lands and farms, let's talk about what kind of passports given to those who remained. Israel was born and they started issuing passports, Israeli passports, but only they were given to the Jewish citizens of Israel. The 135,000 Palestinians inside Israel were denied citizenship. Israel didn't know what to do with them. Even today, some of the Israelis refer to them like the unfinished job of 1948. You have people like Smotrich and Ben-Gvir pretty much blaming the founders of Israel for not finishing the job, for not completely uprooting the Arab population of Palestine, de-Arabizing completely Palestine. So they didn't know what to do with them. They ignored them. They denied them citizenship. They were not given the Israeli citizenship or passport. They were ignored. They were invisible. In this time, they were under military law, where curfews apply only to the Palestinians, not to the Jewish Israelis. Not for a week or two, or a month or two, or a year or two. This situation remained for nearly two decades. The treatment of the Arab Israelis remained like this for nearly two decades, nearly until 1967, when Israel occupied the rest of Palestine, West Bank, including Jerusalem and also Gaza, and occupied the Golan Heights from Syria and the Sinai Peninsula from Egypt. So there was so much to swallow. And that's when the Palestinians who remained in Israel were given Israeli passports. So no credit goes to Israel for that. And we need to know that when they start ranting about Israel treating the Arabs like citizens, that it didn't come before nearly 20 years. So to stay in the topic of passports, now the Palestinians who remained in Israel were denied the Israeli passports for nearly two decades, and now they are given Israeli passports. So technically they are citizens of Israel, but some Israeli academics would argue that they are fifth-class citizens. And after 2017 or 18, when Israel passed the law, the nation law, where they made it legal to discriminate against the non-Jewish citizens of Israel, where you can be, they made a distinction between being a citizen and being a member of the nation, where only those of Jewish faith can be a member of the nation. And if you, and only those who are in the nation can exercise the right of self-determination. So the bottom line is the descendants of the 135,000 Palestinians who remained in their homes, and now there are more than 1.6 or 7 million, hold Israeli passports. Now, let's go to those who were ethnically cleansed, but after this song. Al-Ghani Ba'd Yumain, a song by the Moroccan singer Samira Saeed, composed by the Egyptian composer Jamal Salama. A 44-year-old song.
Hello, I'm Z the People from 47 Soul. You're listening to Palestine Remembered on 3CR Community Radio. Free Palestine.
Now, 900 or more than 900,000 Palestinians were driven out, and they went to one of seven places. The first one, in West Bank. 280,000 went to West Bank, and they were joined by the people of the West Bank. So the population of West Bank nearly were doubled over a few months. The second group went to Gaza. Nearly 200,000 went to Gaza. And Gaza, the population of Gaza, were much fewer than this. So that's why today the majority of the people of from Gaza are descendants, grandchildren of refugees who fled to Gaza in 48. So they were joined by the people from Gaza. So this is the second group. The third group went to Lebanon. More than 130,000 Palestinians went to the north, to Lebanon. And the fourth group went to Syria. 90,000 Palestinians ended up in Syria, because geographically Lebanon is closer to Palestine, especially that, yes, there is border between Syria and Palestine, but there are mountains. So you cannot cross directly from Palestine to Syria diagonally. So that's why you have to go via South Lebanon. So this is the, West Bank, Gaza, Lebanon, Syria. And then the next one is Jordan. 80,000 Palestinians crossed Jordan River, the Holy River. And back then there was water, because Israel decided in 1964 to divert the water feeding that river. And now it's the traces of water. Anyway, so again, 280,000 to West Bank, 200,000 to Gaza, 120,000 to Lebanon, 90,000 to Syria, 80,000 to Jordan, and only 4,000 ended up in Iraq. So this is the quick distribution of the population after Nakba. In terms of their paperwork, the leaders of the Palestinian movement convened in Gaza under the leadership of Hajj Amin al-Husseini, and they put a priority to make every endeavor to liberate Palestine, but to start a government to operate within the remaining 22% of Palestine, which is Gaza and West Bank. The problem is that Gaza and West Bank are not geographically connected. Israel cuts through these two Palestinian lands. And the other problem is that they were only in Gaza. They have no way towards West Bank. And another problem is that in West Bank, the Jordanian army remained under the pretext of preventing the occupation of West Bank, including especially Jerusalem, which has truth in it. So how can you start a government where you cannot have you cannot operate within its mandate? But they did in October 1948. All Palestine government was born. And that government started issuing, among many other things they did. By the way, I want you to remember the name of the Prime Minister. Ahmed Hilmi Pasha was one of the Palestinians of integrity, one of the members of the civil society, was chosen to be the Prime Minister of all Palestine government, which was based in Gaza. And the mandate was the remaining of Palestine, so Gaza and West Bank, including Jerusalem. So they started issuing passports. And any Palestinian around the world, whether you are a refugee or in any of these places, you are eligible to obtain the old Palestine government passport. And now comes the main challenge, political recognition. Who's going to recognize this Palestinian government? Back then, the Arab world was a different world. Only 7 Arab countries were independent in 1948, and 6 of these 7 countries recognized the Palestinian government, except East Jordan. So the 6 countries, starting from Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Syria, Lebanon, and Iraq. Only the King of Jordan, Abdullah I, publicly declared his intentions of refusing to recognize the Palestinian government that called itself All Palestine Government. Now, because of rivalry between the King of Jordan and the King of Egypt, back then Egypt was a monarchy, Egypt recognized the Palestinian state and tried to use it to undermine the aspirations of Jordan to annex West Bank. Because the other Arab countries recognized this, so Palestinians in these Arab countries were eligible to apply for Palestinian passports, which was again All Palestine Government called. And they could travel with these passports to these six Arab countries, within these six Arab countries. Now, beyond these six Arab countries, no other country in the world recognized the Palestinian government passport. So it was only six countries in the world that recognized that Palestinian government and that Palestinian passport. Nevertheless, there were thousands of Palestinians who obtained and traveled and used that passport and entered other countries, but only within the six countries. Now, without going through the details of how Jordan and Britain undermined the Palestinian government, one of the ways was to organize a conference in Palestine, in Jericho, by some Palestinians who really sincerely thought that Palestine would be better off under a bigger political entity. And some would say that because of pan-Arab spirit, they wanted to be in a bigger state. So Jericho Conference in April 1949 called for the King of Jordan or to be united under the Jordanian law. Academics would say that only a small percentage of Palestinians were in favor of that. The majority of Palestinians wanted independence under a Palestinian state. So this is April 49, and by April 50, the Jordanian parliament issued a decree to annex West Bank. And because the Jordanian army was already in West Bank, so the status quo was easy to implement, the West Bank was annexed to Jordan, and it was called the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, which included today's Jordan and West Bank, including Jerusalem. And all of the people in West Bank, whether they are originally from West Bank or those who fled to West Bank in 48 from what later became Israel, were given Jordanian passports because Jordan annexed the land. So this is why some Palestinians hold Jordanian passports. So in figures, the population of Jordan before that was 400,000, and that included the 80,000 Palestinians who fled to the east upon Nakba. But add to them more than 430,000 of the West Bank, and that included those who fled to West Bank from what later became Israel. So overnight, the Palestinians of West Bank became Jordanians, and the Jordanians of the eastern part became less than half of the population. But whether you are in the eastern part of the river or western or Palestinian or Jordanian, there was one citizenship given to all, and all the citizens had access to employment, education, health, representation in the parliament. And from the perspective of the leaders of Jordan, they said that if Jordan did not annex West Bank, Israel would have done that. And some Palestinians agreed with this. Some Palestinians didn't and wanted independence. The reality is multi-layered and complex, as we all know. But in terms of paperwork and in terms of passports, the Palestinians of West Bank, whether they are from West Bank originally or those who fled to West Bank from what later became Israel, were given Jordanian passports and became citizens of Jordan as of April 1950. And that was a big setback for the Palestinian government, the old Palestine government, because they lost West Bank, they lost Jerusalem, and they could only operate in Gaza only. And even the enthusiasm of Egypt and the other Arab countries that recognized the Palestinian government started to fade down for internal and regional reasons. And in 1952, the monarchy in Egypt came to an end, and there was the birth of the Republic, Jumhuriyat Misr al-Arabiya. And even though that it took the Republic some good 7 years to realize that the Palestinian government in Gaza has been really weakened and has no mandate, so it came to an end in 1959, and Gaza became officially under Egyptian custodianship. So they maintained the Palestinianhood of Gaza. They did not annex Gaza the way Jordan annexed West Bank. However, the people in Gaza were under the custodianship of Egypt, and in terms of paper, they were given Egyptian travel documents, not Palestinian passports. I will continue next week contextualizing the paperwork, the passports, the travel documents in given to the Palestinians in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and if time allows, the Palestinian Authority. But we've come to the end of this week's episode. Until we meet next time, have a great time. And until the end of this episode, I'll leave you with a Sufi song by Umm Kulthum. Rida and Noor, contentment and light, but it is performed by the Egyptian voice, Hala Rushdi. Salam.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.